Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today on the show, we're going to talk a little about replanting decisions. Now, I know you may not have gotten the first crop planted, and we certainly hope you don't have to plant twice. But nevertheless, we're going to talk through that just a little bit today. As always, we are happy to take your phone call if you want to call in. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, agphdmedia, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so to begin the day, Darren, I just wanted to talk about this morning, you and I were discussing soybean burn down. We get a lot of questions about this, and two products we wanted to talk about in particular that we get questions about are 2,4-D and Sharpen. So let's start with 2,4-D. If you're going to be applying that burn down any time within 2 or 3 weeks of planting, I am super uncomfortable using 2,4-D. Super uncomfortable. I have seen it hurt yields before, and the way I look at it, farming is one of the riskiest professions there is. It's one of the riskiest ways to invest money. So why add more risk?
Well, here's what I don't like about 2,4-D in that situation is sometimes it doesn't hurt it at all. And sometimes it hurts it really bad. And sometimes it hurts it, but you don't really know because you don't have a check strip out there. And, you know, if you said, well, what about, a product that hurts it every time? Well, that's an easy decision. Yeah, definitely don't do that. Or a product that never, ever hurts the crop. Oh, well, that's a no-brainer too. It's those in-between calls that, you know what?
I agree.
Sometimes it works and it's fine. Sometimes it hurts the crop. Well, I don't care if it's 1 out of 10 times that it hurts the crop. I'm not interested, you know, because this could be that 1 out of 10 years. And wow, you think about it, that could be a big, big deal. Even if it knocks 5 bushel off, you'd never even notice it. It knocked 5 bushel off. I got 75 bushel instead of 80. You wouldn't know. But that cost you $50 an acre. And when there's plenty of alternatives that really don't cost that much more than 2,4-D anymore, you know, it's a whole different deal. Now, I remember back when 2,4-D was only like a buck or two and everything else was $10 or more. I get it. Then you take some risk and you say, well, you know what? I'll just trim the rate down. I'll get the weeds and they're just barely coming up, so I don't have to use much and all this kind of thing. But boy, the price of 2,4-D is up. The price of everything else has come down, and there is no way it's worth the risk anymore.
And the other thing is, weeds are more tolerant to 2,4-D today than 30 years ago. You have to use a higher rate. In pastures, for example, I mean, guys will talk about using a quart to 4-pound 2,4-D, and I'm going, really? That's all you're going to use? I'm using 2 quarts, at least 1.5 quarts, but probably 2. So, I mean, we just have more tolerant weeds. And think about when you spray this burn down. It's when it's cold, when it's early, when the weeds are small. You can try running a low rate. But you're gonna struggle to kill the weeds, and then you still have the risk of hurting the crop. So 2,4-D in my book is out. And guys ask, okay, well, what's the alternative? Well, first of all, we always in soybeans talk about the three pre's: yellow, metribuzin, PPO. So that's what I'm gonna do. That's gonna give you 80% as good a job as 2,4-D on the straight burn down, maybe even as good a job as straight 2,4-D, quite frankly. But if you really want to spike it up, Gramoxone. Gramoxone's your product. Use Gramoxone. And yes, we want it to be warm and we especially want it to be sunny, but and you have to get good coverage. That's the other thing you got to understand. Using a product like Gramoxone is just like using a product like Liberty, for example. You have to have great coverage. If you don't have great coverage, you're not going to have a good weed kill. Okay, so that's one thing. 2,4-D, hate it. In a burn down situation in front of soybeans. Love it in many other cases. Okay, we use 2,4-D in our farm. It's great in the right situation, but not in front of soybeans. Then we go to Sharpen. And this is a really popular herbicide from BSF. It is an outstanding herbicide. We love it in corn. We love it in wheat. It's my number one recommendation as a pre in corn. It's my number one recommendation as a pre in wheat for a guy that has broadleaves. Yes, for broadleaves. It's just a broadleaf killer. But yeah, it's outstanding. Has excellent burn down. Has great residual when you can use 2 to 3 ounces. When you can only use 1 ounce, which is the case in front of soybeans, then you're really limited. You just don't have very much residual. And the burn down is marginal. So I mean, it's, and a lot of guys talk about, well, what am I going to do for my mare's tail? You're going to use Gramoxone is what you're going to use, because sharpen at 1 ounce, mare's tail, my book, it might work, but it's not perfect every time. Whereas 2 ounces, that works great. That's lights out. That's well worth it. But let's also keep in mind, 2 ounces is $10. So, you know, if you say, well, Gramoxone's expensive, well, 1 ounce of sharpen's $5 already. So you're not going to spend much more than that on Gramoxone. And now you've got something that for sure is going to burn things down very well. And I don't have the risk of hurting those soybeans. Even 1 ounce in light soils, it'll tell you right on the label, low organic matter soils, you cannot use 1 ounce in front of soybeans.
All right, I want to step back about 30 seconds in your conversation. You're talking about we could save a couple bucks here, save a couple bucks there. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the biggest challenges in ag, that we get so caught up in trying to save a couple of bucks and we get too cute with our plans. Let's just go with what works about 100% of the time and not take any risk. And if it costs us $2 to $5 an acre more total for the program, that's going to be such a great return on investment, spending that extra $2 to $5 to get more yield. Yield just pays for so much. If we get more yield, if we increase yield 10% on many farms this year, that's going to increase profitability by 45%, because that next 10% of yield is all profit. And in many cases, you didn't spend much more to get there. So look at the trait choices that you're making this spring. If you're putting in soybeans still, put in Liberty Link soybeans or put in Xtend soybeans. Don't plant straight Roundup Ready soybeans. If you've got resistant weeds out there, they're just about impossible to control in crop 100%. You find a lot of products that get 50% or 60 or 70%. But if you want to do a great job, put in one of these other traits, then you've got some incredible options that you can utilize either in a burn down or in crop to knock out tough weeds.
Yeah, and keep in mind, even 99% weed control isn't good enough when you're after water hemp, Palmer pigweed, and these plants that put on a million seeds per plant.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to your corn, you can't cut corners on weed control. But what if you could get a great foundational control and a great value? Now you can with Balance Flex pre-emergence herbicide and its new lower price. Balance Flex provides a flexible foundation that complements any herbicide program, so yields are protected from the start. Talk with your Bayer retailer or visit balanceflex.us/save for a great value on early season weed control. Balance Flex from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
With one finger, it's just point, touch, and go. That's the ease of the Rinke touchscreen control panel. Not only will you have full authority over your pivot's most important features, they can all be programmed with newfound ease. It's one more confident step towards making everything on your operation more efficient. To learn more, contact your local Rinke dealer or visit Rinke.com. That's Reinke.com today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show. Our phone lines will be open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or you can find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Got a friend, Scott Harms, with us right now with Grain PhD. Scott, how are you doing today?
Oh, good afternoon, Darren. I'm doing great.
All right. Since we started Grain PhD, we've had a lot of questions coming in from growers. We get a lot of them asking, you know, hey, I'd like to be more proactive in using futures and options and some of these different elements in my marketing program. But I don't really have the best understanding of the costs. And talking to one broker or the next, sometimes the cost may vary quite a bit. Can you talk a little more about what costs we should expect when we're using futures and options?
Okay, great. When we talk about futures contracts, the futures contracts are traded on a margin. So it's not the value of the contract. In fact, the actual margin that's needed to hold on to a futures contract is really a small fraction of the value of the contract. So a margin is placed either to hold a long or a short futures contract. The margin's the same regardless of which position you take. And it's simply a performance bond. So the exchange is basically saying they're requiring you to put a cushion in your account of funds in order to hold on to the position in the event that there would be a big market movement one way or another against that position, that they've got enough funds there to handle it when you liquidate. The margins are going to be set by the exchange, and they're going to fluctuate throughout the year depending on the volatility that's in the market. So in a more active market, they may just say, you know, we're going to raise the margin requirement rates, and you're going to may have to, if you don't have enough funds in your account, you'll have to deposit additional funds to meet that increase in margin. So, for example, corn hedge, for hedgers and speculators, there's different prices depending on, you know, whether you're a hedger or a speculator, but most of your listeners are going to be hedgers, and you'll get, for a corn contract right now, it's $720 a contract. So that's less than 4% of the value of the contract. So if you buy or sell a contract, it's 5,000 bushels, you'll put up at least $720 to hold on to that position. But then on top of that, you're responsible for any market movement against you. So if you sell a contract of corn, for example, you put up a $720. If the market were to go against you by 10 cents, you're going to have to put up an additional $500 to cover that move against. And the hedge margins for beans are always going to be higher than corn because of the volatility. Right now, soybean hedge margins are running around $1,850 per contract.
Okay, so that's futures. What about options? How does that vary?
Yeah, options are traded a little differently in that you basically are putting up the premium, whatever premium you pay for the option, you're putting that money up front, and then that's all that you have to put up. Once you buy an option, say for instance you buy an option that's worth 15 cents, and it's based, again, on a 5,000 bushel contract, you'd have to come up with $750. And then once you paid for that option, that premium, then that's all that's required to hold on to that position if you're just simply buying an option. That's what makes options attractive to a lot of producers, in that they want to be able to protect their downside or reopen the upside if need be, but they don't want to be faced with margin calls if the market would happen to go against them. So options can be real attractive in that area. Now, the price of the option, that's going to vary depending on, you know, the amount of time value that you want to cover, and also how close to the actual futures price you want to cover. So the price is going to vary. We like to, when someone calls and they want to do an option, we talk about, you know, we may start with a conversation with, all right, how much do you want to spend? And then let's see what product we can find for you. And, you know, options are, they're kind of like insurance. They're all often compared to insurance policies. So it's just, you can pay as much as you want to pay, depending on the amount of coverage you want, as far as price and as far as the time frame that you want to cover. So you really determine what the premium is you're paying. But once you pay it, then you have no more costs associated with that. If you sell an option outright, say sure you want to go short a call option as a hedge protection, then that's going to be treated similar to a futures contract, in that there's going to be a margin associated with it. It's going to be slightly less than a futures contract, but then you're also going to be responsible for coming up with additional margin if the market were to go against you. So if you sell a call, the market goes up, and the premium on that option that you sold it for goes up, you're going to have to cover that cost.
All right. So what about other costs when we're talking futures and options?
There are going to be transaction costs associated. And, you know, so if you have an open a futures and options account, you're going to have to be hooked up with an affiliated. You're going to be affiliated with a licensed broker at an FCM. And the commission charges that the whoever you're working with is going to charge is going to vary depending on your, you know, customer to customer, and it's also going to vary firm to firm. So those are somewhat negotiated, but usually commissions are below, right around a penny or below a penny a contract. There's also going to be some affiliated exchange fees, but those are pretty minimal. They're around $2 a contract. Those are just NFA fees and some other exchange fees. And then there are some more comprehensive programs, I think, still out there where you can pay on a per acre basis. But for the most part, if you want to manage your own futures and options account, most brokers are just going to charge a transaction cost per trade.
All right. Well, that gives us a pretty good look at a lot of the costs around futures and options. If you're listening and you think, oh, okay, I had one more question on that, feel free to send them in. We're taking questions all the time at grainphd.com, and there's a lot of information right there on the website. I invite everybody to check that out too. Scott, before we go, is there anything else that we should be watching right now in the markets?
Well, we're in kind of a quiet time as the crop gets going, but we've seen a little bit of activity in the last couple of days. In the corn market, today was another day where we saw a nice price movement in the corn market. It seems to be the talk of the marketplace right now with declining global stocks being the real feature. There's one market analyst out today that pointed out that the recent Chinese corn crop reduction as far as their crop expectations, it has the potential of drawing corn global stocks below 145 million metric tons. And they point out that that would be the tightest stocks-to-use ratio on a global basis in 45 years. So it doesn't mean that prices are going to go sharply higher here in the short term. They are going to be well-supported, no question. But I think we need to understand, as marketers, the potential of this corn market and protect not only inventory that you have in the field, but perhaps be looking at protecting some future sales that you make to make sure that you're able to maintain and stay with that hedge protection.
Yep, that's good advice. Lots of stuff happening all the time at the grain market. So if you want to keep up on much of that, you can also follow Grain PhD on Twitter or just check it out, grainphd.com. Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the information today.
All right, thanks, Darren.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. We get a lot of questions into Grain PhD. We actually get some of these grain questions or marketing questions into agphd.com, or we get agronomy questions into grainphd.com. Sometimes we can sort that out too. But anyway, there's a lot of information there at Grain PhD that you should be checking out. You know, when you look at what's going on right now, we're talking replanting decisions on today's show. And certainly some of the stuff that Scott mentioned there just about corn, if we can get corn in, or if we had an issue with corn and still have time to replant that, it looks like that's a good decision, especially since you've already got the herbicide out there. You've already got the fertility plan going. Certainly, if you can do that, that's a good way to go. And it depends on so many factors that we're going to get into on today's program as to, well, was it a total loss in the field? That makes the decision actually a little bit easier. Or, you know what, I got a 60% stand, 70% stand. Where's the borderline on what's going to yield versus how much yield loss I'm going to take planting really late into those fields? So we're going to get some more of that discussion about replanting as our show goes on. We're also taking your calls and questions throughout the show today, 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
Think about a quarter inch of rain. That's all it takes to activate Armazon Pro herbicide in your corn and protect against weeds. Now think about a full inch of rain, the amount most other herbicides require for activation. How long will you have to wait to get that? The weeds hope you choose another herbicide. Your corn hopes you choose Armazon Pro herbicide. Pick a winner. Talk to your BASF rep about Armazon Pro herbicide today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
This year, you already made one smart choice by planting glufosinate-tolerant seeds. Now make another, Interline herbicide from UPI. Interline controls tough, resistant weeds like pigweed, water hemp, mare's tail, and ragweed, and glufosinate, Enlist, and Liberty Link cropping systems. And with our new manufacturing facility, there'll be plenty of Interline to go around. So play it smart. Choose cost-effective Interline herbicide. To learn more, contact your UPI distributor or sales representative. Always read and follow label directions.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about replanting decisions. I know it's not a fun discussion, but it happens every year to someone or in a small part of your farm, hopefully, depending on what kind of extreme weather conditions we may have. So it's good to think through these things and be prepared. So when you do have to make those kinds of decisions, you've got some good information to back you up. Got Chuck Knight with us right now with Monsanto Seed Applied Solutions. Chuck, how you doing today?
Hi, doing all right, guys.
All right, so here we are. I mean, I love planting season. I'm so excited to see the crop pop out of the ground. But at the same time, I know there's going to be some problem areas out there where we've got to consider a replant. So where do you start when you have growers say, hey, I might be in a replant situation? What should they be looking at first?
Well, they want to make sure that they go out and get a good stand count and a good average of a stand count. So you want to do this stand count in a few different places in your affected areas and kind of come up with a good solid number there. But the thing about taking stand count is you want to make sure that you're not only looking at the plants above ground, but you're also digging up some of the seedlings to get an idea of, you know, if there's any problems with the roots, if there's any root rot setting in. You want to make sure that you exclude those plants that aren't going to have the potential to live through to the rest of the season.
Oh, that is great advice. I'm so glad you said that, because I know when I was younger and my dad was kind of showing me about this and we were looking at some different situations, he would tell me, okay, you're going to see plants out there that kind of look okay, but look a little bit harder in these situations, because farmers are not just dealing with, well, what does it look like today? They want to know that they're going to have success at harvest time. And if those plants aren't healthy, we've got to do something about that. So let's just say that you've got a marginal stand. Where do you draw that cutoff line? Do you look at some of the historical charts, or where do you go?
What I would do is I would take your good average stand count and also get an idea of how even your stand is. And take that information and compare it to some of the yield potential charts based on planting date and existing population that may be available from like University Extension or from your seed company. And use those figures to get a good estimate of what your yield potential is for your existing stand. And then take that yield potential and compare it to what the potential would be for a replanted crop. You know, are you going to be gaining anything from replanting, or are you better off leaving the stand as it exists?
You know, we get so many farmers as we get further into May that start talking about, well, maybe I should add a seed treatment, or maybe I shouldn't put as much seed treatment on. You look at a lot of these trials, Chuck. What do you see when we get into mid-May? I mean, to me, I look at it as the reason that we're held out of the field is we're probably wet, and that could be a bad situation.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this spring we've had a lot of cool and wet conditions, and those types of conditions are very favorable for diseases like Pythium, which is a major disease in both corn and soybeans. And, you know, if you're being held out of the field, I mean, those diseases are still there. Even if you get into a replant situation, you may still want to consider a fungicide, insecticide, seed treatment, because the diseases and insects that may have been a problem earlier are still going to be a problem when that replanted crop occurs. And you want to make sure that that crop gets established as well as it possibly can be.
All right, so what other things should we be thinking about as we're walking these fields this spring?
Well, the stand count, the crop establishment is certainly important. You want to make sure that emergence is going to be as even as possible, and get in kind of an estimate of that, because even if you've still got a good stand out there, especially when it comes to a corn crop, if you've got some uneven emergence, you could still see some yield reductions from that.
Yeah, if we get back out in the field and we're replanting, I agree with you. And we see a lot of times where we're in such a rush. Oh, man, it's late now, so I got to hurry and put it in. But we're still planting a crop. We got to do our best job to make sure we give ourselves the best chance we have anyway at high yield still, no matter when we're planting. I've been talking with Chuck Knight here with Monsanto Seed Applied Solutions. Chuck, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Got John Long with us right now with Micogen. John, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great today, guys. How are you?
Good, good. All right, so are you getting any of those replant calls yet, or are guys still trying to get it in the first time?
You know, across the northern parts of Iowa, guys are still kind of trying to get in the first time because of wet weather. As you go southward, most everything's in. And I actually had a grower call me a little bit ago and asked me, he said his stand was so good, he was afraid he had too much stand. We had very dry conditions, and everything just came together. And, yeah, if you set the planter at 35, that's pretty much what you're seeing this year. So we had some tremendous, tremendous stands as you go south.
Well, that's good. That's good. I know that's not the case everywhere. So when farmers are thinking, you know, I might have this situation where I may have to replant, what factors do you think they should really take into consideration as they're making that replant decision?
Well, as your previous guest just talked about, as you look at your university's extension websites and, you know, some of the long-term data that they've come up with, and, you know, in the state of Iowa, I can talk about, we were after May 10th, and every day after May 10th, it's said that we lose some yield potential. So as we, you know, sit there, can we still get in and replant this in the next few days? It's about 1% per day. So, you know, if we can get in still this week, you still have a fairly normal yield potential. You know, if it's going to be 2 weeks from now, I always tell people to think about the fact you might only have, say, a 4,000 stand. But at one point, at any given point in time, you're going to get to that point of no return where replanting and getting a full stand probably won't benefit you a whole lot more than the original one. And for the fact that that crop will be wetter come fall and, you know, have some other issues as well. So, you know, I think following those charts is taking the emotion out of it and using science to determine what you need to do there.
You know, a couple of questions. Just say that a guy is going to replant. Choosing maturity, choosing traits, and choosing population are three things that may be different than the first time you do it. How would you suggest adjusting a trait, maturity, and population in a replant?
Well, I've always, thought personally that as we have later corn, later planted corn, seems like every insect in the countryside goes to find those fields, mostly because they're silking later, they're lush later. So I would do everything I could for, trait resistance as far as multi-stack traits like smart stacks of mycogen seeds would be a tremendous choice there to make sure you're covering all your bases. Also, standard seed treatments, as the previous guest said, Pythium could still be an issue in some of those wetter areas. We want to make sure we have something like our Ribontek seed treatment on those hybrids. And also, seed applied insecticides, wireworms, white grubs, all those things are still out there. So I would, as I go later, I would try to protect that planting as much as humanly possible, because for the fact there really isn't going to be time to replant June, you want to make sure that this is your best shot at it.
All right. How about population, John? I've heard a lot of guys say, well, I don't know if I'm going to push that population as much. And then I've heard other guys say, I might push it even a little bit further because I want to get to crop canopy as quick as I can.
Sure. And that's 100% accurate as well. The thinking in the past has always been, as we get later, maybe add a little bit, maybe 5 to 10% to that planting density. Get you to a fuller canopy sooner. Again, get you. Studies have shown that you're going to have a smaller ear size, both the girth and the length. The later you plant, that's probably where you're going to lose some things. So, the name of the game then is let's see how many ears we can produce. So, if you're typically planting a 34,000 on time, I might consider going to a 35, 36 as we get a little later, knowing those ears are going to be smaller, so we're going to produce more ears.
Yep, great advice. John, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a great day.
I hope we don't run into these replant decisions anytime soon, but, man, we've already seen some rivers go out of their banks and this kind of thing. It happens every year where something comes along. One other one this year that has been interesting, we've seen a lot of black cutworm moth flights, and the traps have been just full early spring. So I wonder what kind of cutworm pressure we're going to have. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have lots more, but the odds of it are pretty good, especially in the northern part of the upper Midwest this year. So, you never know. You got to keep scouting out there and just make sure you don't have a problem. And it's just out in some of our ground, shortly after emergence here today, things look pretty good at this point, but I always feel better when I see that everything's up and even and looks good. Then I know I'm not going to have to be back there anytime soon replanting. We'll talk more about these replanting decisions on today's program. Stay tuned.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
With DuPont Approach Prima Fungicide, there's a difference. A real difference you can actually see in the health of your crops and the health of your bottom line. From superior coverage to more reliable performance, Approach Prima delivers long-lasting results against hard-to-control diseases like frog eye leaf spot, while the preventive and curative action gives you the application flexibility you need for greater yield potential. So see the difference of Approach Prima for yourself. Visit approachprima.dupont.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions.
Are you confident that your fertilizer program is the best use of your hard-earned dollar? The folks at AgriLiquid are committed to performance of their products and of your crops. Their unique ability to conveniently apply exactly what your crop needs to optimize your fertility program will not only produce the yield and quality you want, but can also save you valuable time and money. AgriLiquid, for the soil, for the plant, for the future. Find a dealer near you at agriliquid.com.
With the success of the Case IH Steiger Quad Track and Magnum Road Track tractors, it's no secret why Case IH is the leader of the track. So it wasn't surprising when the competition started imitating us, because Case IH offered the first five-axle design to give you more power to the ground with less burming and compaction, all to help you be more productive. Still, we're flattered. In fact, if we weren't already red, we'd be blushing. To learn more, visit caseih.com/tracks.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem's Mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco and Vilify, two new products powered by Bellum. For application flexibility and season-long control, that's Evinco and Vilify, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about, something that nobody wants to talk about, replanting decisions, but it happens every year, so we're getting some advice from around the country. We'd love to hear from you, too. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Mike Schultz with us right now with NK Seeds. Mike, how you doing?
You're doing well. How are you?
Good. We figured this would be a good time to talk about replanting decisions since most guys are still getting the crop in the first time in the north. But in the case that you would have to replant, what are some of the things that you're looking at out in fields that farmers should be aware of?
I think it's essential to first determine what was the cause of the uneven stand or the poorer stand out there that's bringing up the replant discussion. Was it a plant or was it a mechanical issue? Was it carryover from a herbicide applied last year, or was the wrong herbicide applied up front this year? Fertilizer—that's always a concern in some soil types that could cause some replant issues or initial stand issues. And a lot of the discussion will evolve around weather and what implication weather has on replanting, but I think it's really critical to determine that root cause, so then you can make the necessary adjustments if and when you have to replant and put that second stand in.
So Mike, you bring up a great point there, but what I'm curious about is, okay, so over the years, what's been, other than hail, kind of the most common thing that you've seen guys have issues with in fields that's forced them to replant?
I've seen excessive rainfall drown out acres. I've dealt with some herbicide carryover injury. If Flexstar was applied too late into end
yep.
of July,
yep.
That's a very common one. You can, on certain soil types where you don't have the necessary rainfall and the high enough organic matter to degrade that soil residual, you can see crop injury, and I've dealt with some of those acres myself.
So when you talk about that, one specifically, the guy's planted corn. He's probably even applied a corn herbicide. So now he's kind of stuck. He's got to stay with corn. Do you find that planting that month or month and a half later, then most of the Flexstar is gone? Or what do most guys do then when they've got that Flexstar carryover issue?
Typically with spring rains, especially, it seems that's what it takes to flush out any residual that's left hanging in the soil. Unfortunately, then it's you're kind of on your second round there to try to shoot for the best stand and best yield that you can get. But the damage should be less severe, if at all, at that point.
So what else do you talk to guys about when it comes to this whole replanting discussion?
Well, it's a really tough decision to make on your own. I always stress and encourage growers to bring in agronomists, bring in seed representatives, get their insurance agent involved because they might be the one cutting the check in some cases.
Yep.
Or a lot of cases for this.
Yep.
So the more opinions that you can get on that acre, on that farm, everybody can sleep better at night. Everyone can put their heads together and read over the extension publications, the university spreadsheets that have been compiled over the years to help you as the grower make the best decision possible for your acres.
Now, unfortunately, this year, there are a lot of guys who don't have corn in the ground. I just saw the report yesterday in South Dakota. Only 21% of the corn was planted. So this year, the first planting is kind of like what a replant thing ends up as normally. So in other words, when we start talking about, let's say, planting corn May 25th, what kind of tips do you have for us there to get the best success out of that late planted corn?
I'll go back to those extension and university spreadsheets. Utilize those to make sure that you don't switch out of a hybrid too soon or even a variety too soon. Stay the course that you may have planned 4, 5, 6 months ago when you made a seed purchasing decision. You might not have 100% of the yield potential out there, but 96% of yield potential, even 85% yield potential on a full season hybrid or full season variety is greater than a lesser season, shorter season hybrid and variety.
You know, one other thing about that too, it's to me more than just the variety number or you say, hey, that yield's good. It's the defensive traits too, because there are people who have selected certain defensive traits for, let's say, Goss's wilt, for example. Well, if you say, oh, I got to switch, and your seed dealer says, okay, well, we got this earlier number. So what I've found over the years is sometimes guys kind of forget about all those conversations they had in picking the right variety, and now it's just, hey, I got to have anything. I got to have something early. And so now not only do you lose because that variety may not yield as well in good conditions, but now you don't have that defensive trait you need. So if that disease happens to show up, now you're really in trouble.
It could be like a double whammy on that acre then.
Yep, for sure. All right, so Mike, any last comments for us on replants at all today?
Not today. Just want to wish everyone a safe spring, and hopefully we get out there soon.
All right, again, we've been talking to Mike Schultz with NK Seeds. Mike, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, so in terms of replant decisions, I guess there were a lot of great points brought up today, but the big thing I'm looking at on our farm all the time, and what I always suggest to guys, is make sure you're getting a representative sample. In other words, if you just go to one spot and you say, oh, the whole field's bad, that's not good.
Well, it's kind of where Mike said it's a hard decision to make on your own because you're so biased. Mm-hmm. That, well, even today, I was out looking at a plot, and we had a couple different seed treatments we were comparing, and I had two other people look at it, too, and I said, all right, I'm not going to tell you where the split is. Take a look here across this part of the field and see if you can pick out a line. Well, they couldn't pick out a line, and neither could I. But, boy, I really wanted one of those things to win, but if you can't be unbiased as you're looking across that field, if you say, boy, I think it's okay, it's good to get another opinion, have a neighbor look at it, say, hey, what would you do if this was yours? And they'll tell you.
You know, the other thing that I found over the years is I'm now to the point, as an agronomist who's been doing this for probably 30 years, I do not pull the trigger very early in replants. That stand has got to be pretty horrible before I say, yep, I'm absolutely telling you for sure the replant thing is going to pay. So it all depends on the date, you know, but let's just say that you had planted your corn originally April 15th and you come along May 25th, June 1st, something like that. That stand's probably got to be 40-50% before I'm tearing it up. But yeah, it all depends on the situation. And so that's where, you know, you do want to be talking to some people, give it a little bit of thought, get, you know, 2-3 opinions on the whole thing. But it's tough, and you just don't know what Mother Nature is going to bring for you afterwards. That's the concern. So like where we farm, for example, very often we're dry in June or July. So the replant, I don't get the rainfall, and I say, well, it's not worth it to me. But if you're in a wet area or you have irrigation, you might be in a whole different situation.
You know, the other thing I look at, Brian, we've got some river bottom ground, and generally if we've got to put more crop in later, it's because there is flooding. And if you've got flooded ground, you just have to think about what's really happened there. All the oxygen has left that soil, and you've probably killed off a lot of your microbes. So you've got to be prepared for that with what you do. whether that's the biological seed treatment option that I would certainly be doing. But the other thing would just be make sure that you have good soil conditions. I mean, if it's still muddy out there, you're just wasting your time. You're just going to have more trouble. Like you said, you're hitting the hot months of the summer, and that soil is just going to turn to a rock. And if you mud it in, you're going to have nothing but trouble.
Well, when you talk about this overland flooding, yep, I get that. But nevertheless, tile absolutely pays. I was just talking to a guy this morning, and I said, why? He was talking about his brother only has none of his corn planted. And I go, well, why doesn't he have tile on the ground? If he had tile on the ground, he'd be planting now.
All right, we'll get back to more of your calls and questions right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Looking for an affordably priced fertilizer additive proven to boost yields in row crops? More than 1,000 third-party research trials concluded that Nutex EDA increases yield over 80% of the time. Nutex EDA is a micronutrient-based fertilizer additive that works by supporting the plant's enzyme processes to increase nutrient uptake of your applied NPK fertilizers. Try Nutex EDA this spring to maximize the return on investment of your fertilizer dollar.
Make your fertilizer dollar go further with Quick Roots technology. This seed inoculant contains two powerful microbes that can free nutrients bound up in your soil. And it can help lead to greater nutrient availability for improved root and shoot growth, which allows for better uptake of N, P, and K, key ingredients for a healthy crop. Quick Roots technology can help increase your yield potential and maximize your nutrient investment. See how you can make your fertilizer dollar go further at MonsantoBioAg.com/QuickRoots.
Take a second and listen. You hear that? That's the sound of your roots growing where they've never gone before. There are additional nutrients and water in your soil, hidden in tough-to-reach spaces. With MycoApply Endoprime, hyphae attach to the root hairs to reach small areas inaccessible to big roots, even some that are tied up in the soil. Applied in furrow at planting, MycoApply Endoprime uses four unique species of mycorrhizal fungi to go where roots can't. Unlock the potential of your corn crop with all new MycoApply Endoprime. And by nurturing your soil today, you're helping to ensure future harvest will be just as bountiful. For more information, talk to your local retailer or visit valent.com/endoprime. Always read and follow label instructions.
Ultra Blazer.
Kind of sounds like the name of a superhero, doesn't it? Well, to soybean growers, it is. Because Ultra Blazer controls the toughest weeds, including pigweed, ragweed, and water hemp. And you can make it part of your resistance management program on all trait-based beans, even dicamba tolerant. Plus, with Ultra Blazer, there are no plant back concerns. Talk about superpowers. To learn more, contact your crop protection consultant or dealer. Always read and follow label directions.
You know phosphorus is important to your crops, but did you know that phosphorus won't be released from the soil until temperatures reach 60 to 65 degrees? Ouch! If you're looking at a cold, wet spring, you want to provide your crop the phosphorus it needs to get out of the ground and onto the business of growing as quickly as possible. AgriLiquid's Pro Germinator contains both readily available and controlled release phosphorus with minimal danger of tie-up in the soil. Go to agriliquid.com. to learn more about providing your crops the nutrients they need, regardless of the weather.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Talking about replanting decisions and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We got Dell on with us right now in Michigan. Dell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
All right, did you have a question for us?
I do. If you have a drowned out area, fairly large area, and you want to replant it, do you replant in the exact same spot with the exact same planter the second time? And does it mess up the rest of the field to bring your planter in to replant a bad spot?
Yep, great question.
Yep, so The challenge with our whole topic here today and the replant decisions thing is we could literally spend a week talking through all the different scenarios.
Well, just the scenarios that we've seen over the years. Right. It's crazy all the different things that happen out there. But you're right. You see it, especially if you're up on the highway and you're looking down into a field and you can just see these little pockets out there that in many cases are poorly drained spots. Yeah, for guys, they've got a limit of, well, if the crop is this short, I can still get through there without tearing up too much of my good crop to try and replant those areas.
Okay, so Dell, I'll tell you exactly how we've handled this before and how we talk about this as agronomists to people. So before we got tile on our farm, then we had a lot of these areas. And what we would do is we would go back into those spots, sometimes even two or three times, and replant them. And yes, we would drive down some crop. If we felt like we drove down enough crop, we would literally till our path and plant back as we left the field. So we did that several times over the years. If the crop is small, you can usually drive, and you know, our equipment is designed for this. It's designed to drive down rows. So there really isn't a big problem as long as we're talking row crop and the crop is relatively small. You just drive down to that spot and you go ahead and replant that. In terms of should we plant into the same row or not, with soybeans, we're almost always planting in between. With corn, some guys will say, well, I banded a bunch of fertilizer, and in order to extract that fertilizer to the best ability that I can, then I want to go plant right there in that row. But here's the problem. They have plants already growing. If you have plants growing and they're soybeans, it's not a big deal. You're not going to expect yield loss. But if you have a few corn plants, what guys will say is, boy, I have 10,000 plants per acre in this kind of wet area, but I planted 35,000. So I got a horrible stand. I want to kill off the remaining 10,000. How do I do it? And I say, okay, is it Roundup corn? Yep, it's Roundup corn. All right, well, then obviously Roundup isn't going to work. So then what do you go with? Okay, you could use Liberty. Well, Liberty burns stuff to the ground. Does it kill the growing point all the time? No. So you can try that if you want to. The other thing is guys will say, well, why don't I just use a volunteer corn herbicide? There's whatever, Fusilade, Assure 2, you know, Clethodim, all these products. Yep, that's true. But the problem is they have a tiny amount of soil residual. So if you use those, you should probably wait a week before you plant the corn back in there again. Well, now you're another week later, and if you get another rain, you know, who knows when you're going to get it in there. So these are some of the challenges that we've faced over the years. And so ideally what I'm probably doing is I'm going to till that area, and that way I destroy the plants and I don't have to worry about the herbicide and the residual and any of that other stuff or the herbicide not working. I just go till that little area and then I go plant, and I just plant probably right back where I planted before.
Thank you so much. I'm the son of a dairy farmer. I love your show.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks a lot, Del. Yep. Really appreciate the call.
Yep, appreciate it, and hope you don't have to do any replanting this year.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Del.
All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
Mailbag time. Questions. Answers. Brian. Darren. Mailbag time. Yeah. Mailbag.
All right, Cody, who's a student in South Dakota, had sent in a couple of questions. We got to the first one yesterday on the show, so we're getting to the
second part of
the
question. And Darren would probably say, Brian is way too windy.
Well,
and so that's
there were
why we only
5 minutes left in the show, and Cody just had two questions. So I thought, no problem, we'll get through Cody's email, and we might even get through another one.
That does sound like an Ag PhD answer. Okay.
All right. Okay, so here's question two, but there's about four parts to it. So why don't you just hear me out on the whole thing here,
okay,
Brian, before you jump in.
All right.
Okay. Cody said, I'd like some input on a soybean trial. I'm thinking about putting inoculant and spraying it over the top at V3. Wondering if you've seen any response doing this and what rate you might use. Also, since I'm going over the ground anyways, I'm thinking about some products to help break down and produce more carbon dioxide, potentially using sugar, liquid 27%, or a fungal biological. Just curious if any of those you've tried and if they'd work.
Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. So first of all, on that inoculant thing, I'd brought this up maybe a couple of months ago. There was an article, I believe, just thinking off the top of my head, it was in the High Plains Journal, Brazil. They had done some work spraying inoculant over soybeans at V3 and gotten response. And I don't remember what the very ideal timing was. That might have been it, but you could look that up. You can just do a search on the internet and you should find something. They had fairly decent yields, 5% yield increase to 10%, something like that. So for a $2 investment, that sounded pretty darn good to me. We've never tried any of that. I'd never even heard of any of that before. So I know we're going to try some this year, and we'll let you know how that turns out. In terms of increasing carbon dioxide, what he's getting at here is breaking that residue down faster. And the whole point is plants breathe in carbon dioxide, and they release air out into the environment, or oxygen out into the environment. And so anyway, the more carbon dioxide you have, like in labs, in greenhouses, they'll pump carbon dioxide in there, and that can help improve yield. So a lot of people think, well, boy, can I increase that carbon dioxide level by throwing, like to his point, sugar, 28%, a biological, something like that.
Yeah, and if you can get residue breakdown to release carbon dioxide, yeah, that's good. You can put a microbial out there. We've been doing some work with decomp and testing that out.
But let's play that out here for a second.
You can put some sugar out there to feed the microbes.
It's going
to
break down naturally anyway. So
it is.
So what are we worried about? I mean, why would we want to have it break down this year as opposed to next year? Why would we want to have it break down in June as opposed to August? So that's what I'm struggling to
think about logically. Well, if you can get it to break down when you've got a crop canopy out there, then that crop canopy can better catch it.
Yeah,
but so like with soybeans, if they're flowering in July and into August, yep, across much of the upper Midwest, if you can get that residue breakdown to happen then, that can be pretty fantastic to release that carbon dioxide. Now, if you did it when the beans are 3 inches tall, you don't have enough plant there to catch it. You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
so if
I
you can time that out just a little bit, that may help, and who knows? Like you're saying, there's only so much residue out there. So whether it breaks down this year or next year, who cares? You're going to miss, whatever, 1 year. And then after that, there's 1 year's worth of breakdown every year for the rest of time.
So my whole thinking is, yep, there are things you can do to break down residue faster. Biologicals, there's some out there, sugar, 28%, whatever. Sure, that's all fine. I just don't know that you're going to have yield gain. We'll see.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Cody. You got two more that I'd like to get to if we have time. One from Steven. He said, diatomaceous earth. What do you think of that as a soil amendment? I got some that's been used as a filtering agent at a winery.
It's a rock. So adding rock to my soil, I don't know that I'm super excited about, but this rock contains silica. And Rob Fritz and I, he occasionally helps host the show here at Ag PhD Radio. He and I have a little bet going this year because we're trying some silica trials, and he thinks it's going to be a big deal. I think it's going to do nothing. But I said, I'm really hoping you're right. I'm super hoping that I lose, and we figure out, wow, we need silica. So it's one of these things. Yeah, maybe that'll work. I don't know. So maybe you're getting response from the silica. That's a good question. And like we always say, I don't care what it is. If you try it, it's okay for the environment, and it works. Why not keep doing it?
Okay. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, Stephen. And one that just came in from Dylan in Oklahoma. He said, we're in a severe drought here in Oklahoma, and doing a burn down is getting tough.
Yep.
We're increasing chemical rates and using MSO to help.
Yes.
What carrier volume do you recommend for drought stress burn downs?
Depends on how big stuff is. So usually we still talk small amounts of water, but in drought stress, I may consider bumping it slightly just so I get better coverage, especially with that MSO to break through the wax and bring my herbicide into the plant.
Hey, thanks for the question, and good luck, Dylan. Hopefully you catch some rain soon. Hey, if you're thinking of coming to the Ag PhD Field Day, if you'd like the VIP treatment, you can sign up to win a free VIP trip from Corteva. Just text the word winner to 31313. Thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.